We're going live, ladies and gentlemen. We're on the air on the internet once again.
The United Nations is welcoming. I'll listen. I like who that guy from Philadelphia to call in too.
Well, I mean, if he's listening, yeah, but it doesn't matter, Steve. What's going on is one thing. Socialism does not work because you know what? You have to have other people's money for government.
Thank you,
and so,
if I got
to
go, buddy.
I know you do. Bye. And so for everybody else, you have to have other people's money to work so that you can, you pay for socialism. It doesn't work. It doesn't produce any doggone thing. All it can do is take from others and give to someplace else or squander like they do. Now, our whole Congress is at fault for a lot of that, and they need to deal with it and step up to the plate. But when you have a president that is falsely going to try to drop the corporate income tax rate from 35% down to 28%, and we're sitting up here and he's going to do this, but we have to make investments in society. That foolishness. Go ahead.
Well, what right does the president have to tell me what I can do with my own money?
Well, see, that's the whole thing. He doesn't, but because we've allowed it to happen for so long, that's what we've put up with. And then we have all these people that are believers. He's just trying to do the right thing. No,
well,
he's not.
Well, that's the whole problem with the concept of income taxes. It encourages people to break two of the Ten Commandments. Thou shalt not covet, and thou shalt not steal. And it breeds covetousness, and it demands that your government steal from your next-door neighbor to give to you. And that's what it does. That's the whole concept of income taxes. And that's how it was sold, was we're going to get the rich people. And instead of getting the rich people, because the rich people wrote the law.
This is right.
It's getting the people that you think are rich, which aren't really, really rich. You know, the guys around here that own the local bakeries and own the local trucking companies and own that stuff, they're not rich. They're not the Buffetts and the Gateses and the Rockefellers and the Carnegies. And those are the people that wrote the law.
Right.
And they're not paying taxes.
Right. And you know, here it is again. You know, we come to the same discussion. And each time the left brings out the argument that we're not doing for the people. We're not doing this for that person and that person for this. Listen, if you leave certain things alone, those people would be taken care of by the society. Because guess what? The best form of welfare is a good paying job. Or they say well-paying job. Whatever it is, that's what it is.
You know, I heard an interesting take on this increase in minimum wage thing.
Mm-hmm.
It promotes, by overpaying for a position, it promotes slothfulness and laziness because people don't try to better themselves.
This is true.
You know, if I can walk into an unskilled position and make a large amount of money, I'm not going to try to learn anything or to better myself at all.
No. And that's what we're not understanding here in this country right now, because they've been very good at indoctrinating a whole level of children in school to believe that the government is the answer to their problems, questions, and their lives. And we should be beholden to them, and if we are, they'll take care of us. And it's simply not the case. But anyway, we're gonna take a little change over right now. We're going to go and we're going to start talking about a very controversial law that people have been fighting about for the last few weeks. You see that even after the law was not invoked in Florida in the Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman trial, that the president and the attorney general came directly out to attack a law called Stand Your Ground Law. Now, Stand Your Ground was not used in Florida once again, but we have people that have now attacked it with all 4 feet. You have to ask yourself why. We have on the end of our line a specialist and a person, one of the foremost. Go ahead, Six, introduce the caller because he is on the air.
Yes, we have with us Masad Ayoub, and he is one of the nation's leading law enforcement experts and also self-defense and stand-your-ground experts. How are you doing today, Moss?
Hey, good to be back.
We're glad to have you here.
So now, you are now one of the foremost authorities in the country on law enforcement.
Well, some people are kind enough to say so. I specialize in use of force, both law enforcement and private citizen.
Okay, so you would be very familiar with a lot of these laws and the nuances of them, probably across the nation, if that would be correct.
Yeah, actually, more states than not have the Stand Your Ground law. The one that's codified in Florida is 77612. Essentially, mm-hmm. the history of law in civilized countries has always been that if you are unlawfully attacked, you need not retreat, and you're allowed to stand your ground and fight back with the same level of force. The so-called retreat requirement goes back to the English common law in the Middle Ages. It was a concept called homicide se defendendo. And what that meant at that time in English culture, it was common for two men in an argument to fight to the death. It was not unknown for among the nobility, if one is insulted, he challenges the other to a duel to the death. And basically, the English said, look, enough of this. People are dying unnecessarily in mutual combat to satisfy their pride. And the law that they brought in under the homicide se defendendo principle was that you could only respond with that degree of force if you are unable to safely retreat from your assailant. Now,
mm-hmm.
that has never been required if you're attacked in your own home. The Stand Your Ground law that goes back to 2005 in Florida, the one that's being questioned now, prior to that, there was a retreat requirement in place. But what everyone misses is in Florida at that time and today in the states that still have a retreat requirement, requirement is only demanded if you can do so in complete safety to yourself and to other innocent persons. And if you think about it, it's hard to imagine a situation where you or I would shoot a human being to death if we could have safely simply turned and fled. But none of us can outrun a bullet. It's pretty hard to turn and run faster than the guy in front of you can plunge his upraised knife into your chest. And no one expects us to throw a baby from the sleigh to placate the wolves and run away, leaving behind family members who can't run as fast as we are. So essentially all the Stand Your Ground law did in Florida was simply say, look, if you're in a place where you have a right to be and you are unlawfully attacked, you need not retreat before defending yourself. At the same time that they changed that, they added some other provisions in the 776 series in the Florida statutes, one of which provided that if you had a reasonable claim of self-defense, you could request what's become known as a Stand Your Ground hearing. This was essentially a mini trial done in front of a judge instead of a jury. And if you could establish to a preponderance of evidence standard, that is greater than 50% certainty, that you were acting in self-defense, the law provided that the judge could dismiss the case at that time. Finally, there was another provision of civil immunity that stated if the authorities had ruled the case to be a self-defense shooting at the criminal justice level, that was grounds to throw out any lawsuit resulting from that incident at the civil court level. So these concepts have been widely confused among a lot of the pundits, a lot of the newspaper columnists, and hugely and probably deliberately confused by the people who want to ban your right to own firearms and your listeners' right to do the same.
Well, Mr. Alp, I'm going to ask you, can you bear with us right now? We have to go to a commercial break, and then we're going to come back and get into this law and discuss it. And I see some callers are getting into the queue right now, and so we're going to discuss this right on the other side. Afternoon with Tracy and friends, Jeff Stick and Masood Ayoub. Okay, Masood Ayoub, discussing Stand Your Ground. We'll be right back after these messages.
Harper Keegan with your headline news. Allegiant Air has just added Punta Gorda as a new travel destination. Starting October 30th, passengers can now travel from Youngstown to the city in southwest Florida. The new nonstop flights will operate twice a week with an introductory one-way fare of $89. Allegiant is looking to expand services to other cities such as Vegas and Fort Lauderdale. Campbell's Board of Education just approved a contract to hire 93 teachers, nurses, and guidance counselors. The teachers' union is excited a deal was reached before school starts. And the city of Warren is getting rid of eyesores in its neighborhoods by tearing down condemned homes. A total of $1.3 million will be spent on demolishing those houses, and part of the process involves asbestos abatement. The cost to remove asbestos averages from about $8,000 to $10,000 per house. About 150 homes in Warren are in the process of being torn down already. For WSOM News, I'm Harper Keegan.
Everyone faces challenges in their lives. Handling it on our own sometimes is too overwhelming, but Turning Point Counseling can help. Turning Point offers the highest quality, individualized, confidential behavioral health care. Our professional and caring staff can help you or your loved one get started on the road to recovery today. Turning Point Counseling, because behavioral health care is health care. Don't wait. Visit our website for more information or call today for care. Everybody faces challenges in their lives. Sometimes these challenges can be too much to handle on our own. That's where Turning Point Counseling can help for depression, anxiety, suicidal thoughts, drug and alcohol abuse and addiction, personality disorders, crisis intervention, and more. Turning Point also provides residential services in our crisis stabilization unit for those who need inpatient care. Turning Point Counseling Services, helping you on the road to recovery.
This is Becky Wall from Daring Compressor. Are you looking for a career and not just a job? Then we may be looking for you. Daring Compressor is proud to support the area's local education and training centers that have developed programs and degrees to prepare our local workforce for the jobs of the future.
Newcastle School of Trades focuses exactly on what's needed to start a career in the new economy.
The great thing about Newcastle School of Trades is we've been in existence since 1945, so the trades that are in demand now through oil and gas, we're an expert in these areas. We've been doing them for quite some period of time. As a matter of fact, if you walk through the halls Newcastle School of Trade, you'll see lists of over 1,000 employers that have hired our graduates. So we've had a lot of success matching the skills of our graduates with the demands of the employers in our area.
To find out more about Newcastle School of Trades, call 1-800-837-8299 or see a complete list of courses and services at ncstrades.edu.
Wounded warrior Dale Beatty is beginning the most important journey of his life. From the battlefield to home, home to some very good medicine, his family's love. They'll be staying together at a Fisher House. Fisher House Foundation provides comfortable housing and other services to the families of wounded warriors and veterans while they receive care at military and VA hospitals. Remember those who serve and sacrifice. Make a donation to Fisher House, because a family's love is good medicine.
America's best talk. This is News Talk 600.
Mark Levin is on the radio.
We are going to come at you politically. I wish I could do everything possible to sabotage your agenda, because your agenda is anti-American, anti-free market, and anti-private property, because your agenda is an attack on the individual. I, personally, will do whatever I can to sabotage such an agenda, to obstruct it, to divert it, because I'm coming after you all the time.
Weekdays from 6 to 9 p.m. on News Talk 600 WSOM. 1-800-530-WSOM or 347-945-5229. Call in now to talk to Tracy and friends on News Talk 600 WSOM.
And we're back once again, afternoon with Tracy and friends. Myself, Jeff, is in the air chair. And we have Sticks also in the air chair. And we're talking about Stand Your Ground laws and rules in America with Mr. Massad Ayoub. He is going to expound. We're going to ask some more questions, and we're going to grill you real hard, man, okay? You've been
not
doing
a
great job. Yeah, you're used to that, right? I'm sure.
Well, part of the job description.
Amen. I understand. Being a son of a lawyer, I'm very very familiar with with the courtroom and legal practices. Period. So here it is. We're going through this great crisis in America now because somebody has decided that they were going to politicize guns in America for their own rulings or standards. So now we're dealing with this. What was the dynamic of Stand Your Ground that people really thought was going on in Florida? Tell us what you think about Florida and the Zimmerman case.
Well, going back several years ago when Stand Your Ground was passed in Florida, it got quite a bit of publicity. The Brady campaign, the primary group that opposes civilian gun ownership, blew it all out of proportion with a media blitz that said, stay out of Florida, don't go there. This new law says anyone can just say they were afraid of you and shoot you and get away with it. Well, that was total BS then. It's total BS now. Sadly, we have a whole lot of newspaper editorial writers and talking heads on television that like ratings more than they like the truth. And they've parroted this so much that the general public actually believes it. Basically, anyone who wants to find out how it works can simply do a Google search for the relevant Florida statute, which is 776.012. And then they have to cross-reference with the recommended jury instructions for homicide cases in the state of Florida and with Florida case law. But in any state, including Florida right now, if you have shot someone in self-defense, you have to show that your actions were what a reasonable and prudent person would have done in the exact same situation, knowing what you, the defendant, knew at the time you pulled the trigger. That also is a heritage of the English common law called the reasonable person doctrine.
Okay. So, let's see.
So, what is Castle Doctrine and Stand Your Ground the same thing?
No, Castle Doctrine speaks primarily to the home. In the original English common law, what it comes from is the Englishman's home is his castle, attacked there, he need not retreat. Now, the same doctrine also said that the cottage of the most humble peasant is his castle, and even the king may not enter without an invitation or a warrant. Now, the latter part of that, of course, refers to what we would call Fourth Amendment issues in this country today. But basically, the Castle Doctrine holds in every state. In some states, it's in what we call the black letter law, the written statutes and the codes. Some states, you have to look in the case law, the precedent set by the appellate courts, or in the recommended state jury instructions. But one of those three sources, you'll find it in all 50 states. Now, what people miss with Castle Doctrine is even though your home is your castle, that doesn't mean you're allowed to have an execution chamber or a torture chamber. There are some people think, wow, this means I can shoot any trespasser. No, it doesn't. Well, sure, it must mean that I can at least shoot anybody who breaks into my home. Actually, no. There still has to be some reasonable perception of threat from that person, physical threat to you as opposed to theft of property, before you can pull the trigger.
This is correct. I got that in the concealed carry force, and that just because they come in doesn't mean they pose a threat to you. But it should.
True. If folks want to kill people for trespassing or theft, they'll have to go to Iran and live under Islamic law. Because, like it or not, one of the tenets of American law, you find it classically in the Supreme Court case, Garner versus Tennessee, says that human life has a greater value than any mere property, even if the mere property is the Hope Diamond or something.
Okay. Now, do you recall the Joe Horn case in Texas several years ago?
Yes, I do. Pasadena, Texas.
Right. Now, did they determine that he was being attacked? Is that what the determination
was
there?
That's correct. And again, the general public, all they saw when they played on CNN the audio tape of him talking to the 911 dispatcher, what had happened, for your listeners who aren't familiar with the case, Horn calls in. He has seen some men next door who are burglarizing the home of his neighbor, who he knows is away. And Horn says, "I've got a shotgun." Basically, he says he's going to go out there and hold them for the police. And the dispatcher tells him not to do that. And he's like, "Look, I'm sorry, I'm going out there." And then over the still open phone line, you hear boom, boom, boom. And he has ended up shooting and killing the two men. The public saw that as him being the vigilante avenger who went next door on the neighbor's property and shot and killed the two burglars that were looting the man's house. What saved Joe Horn, and the reason the grand jury returned no true bill, that is, they refused to indict him, was that down the street there was a plainclothes police officer in an unmarked car who saw the whole thing. And what had happened, and what the evidence confirmed, when Horn confronted those men and tried to make a citizen's arrest, they came at him. One of them was wielding a metal bar. And bam, 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 he fires three shots, kills them both. But at the instant he fired, the actual shooting was direct self-defense. And that was why he was never criminally charged.
Very interesting.
So citizen's arrest is legal in the United States?
It is legal in virtually every state, but each state treats it a little bit differently. And it's worth going to your own statute books and your listeners, find out what the rules of the road are where they live. The general rule of thumb, and I say this having carried a badge for 39 years, is citizen's arrest is something you can do. It is not always the smartest thing to do. The private citizen who takes someone at gunpoint that turns out they've taken the wrong person can end up being charged with kidnapping or a felony aggravated assault. The police officer who does the same in the line of duty has the so-called good faith defense, which the private citizen does not.
Okay, Mr. We have a caller interested in asking you a question. For all
sure.
You are in there.
Yes, I have a question. The self-defense or stand your ground, does this mean that just because you're being followed or because you're walking in the same direction as someone else, that doesn't give you the right to do bodily harm to that person?
That's correct. There's no law against following people. It would certainly give you a reasonable cause to get on your cell phone and call the police and say, "Hey, I think someone's following me and I'm getting a little nervous. Could you send a police officer?" It's certainly not grounds for use of physical force.
Thank you very much. That's been a contention of mine for the last month here, so I appreciate your answer. Thank you.
Stay on the phone. Stay on. Hold on. Now I'm going to say this. Now, this was discussed here in light of the Trayvon Martin case, which, the people came back and they were, they came back with what they came back with. Excuse me, I'm going to say it like this. That's what I say. Excuse me very much. With that in mind, I'm an African-American man.
Yeah.
I've been Trayvon Martin. And for us, it has never been a good thing to have a white man follow you and then chase you down the street. You know what I'm saying?
I do.
Especially when he doesn't.
Let me
give you a scenario.
Okay. Yep.
No uniform. No, "Hey, I'm Block Watch. What are you doing here?" None of that. Now, if he corners me, gets me in a place where I think I don't really have a way out, That's a threat to me. I'm going to do something to you, I guarantee you. So my point is this. I understood all of the ramifications, but nobody ever considered that this man not only followed Trayvon, when Trayvon ran away and tried to lose him, which he told his girlfriend he was doing, he ran after him. Now, tell me why there is no way that Trayvon had a right to stand his ground. And that's just my thing. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, just looking at the evidence, if you listen to the initial tape of Zimmerman with the non-emergency dispatcher, you hear the car door open, you hear some what sounds like wind in the microphone, and as Zimmerman speaks, he's a little bit short of breath. At this point, hearing all that, the dispatcher realizes he's out of the car and moving rapidly. The dispatcher asks, "Are you following him?" Zimmerman says, "Yeah." Dispatcher says, "You don't have to do that." Zimmerman says, "Okay." At that moment, you hear the wind noise in the phone stop. Zimmerman's breath returns to normal, and it's clear he is no longer jogging in the same direction. He got out of the car after the dispatcher had asked, "Where is he now?" Now, put yourself in the position of the guy trained in Neighborhood Watch. You've been told that you, the Neighborhood Watch, are the eyes and ears of the police. You are now on the phone with that dispatcher. And even though that dispatcher has no authority to order you to do anything, he is still the voice you hear when you call the police department. So in a real sense, he is the voice of authority. I can see where, when he asks, "Where is he?" and Zimmerman has lost sight of him, why Zimmerman would take that as a request for information. If you were to ask me, "Where is the corner of First and Main?" if I wasn't sure, I would start looking around to find it for you. And I think that is probably what Zimmerman was doing. But the evidence indicates that at that point, Zimmerman turned around and was walking back to his car. It sounds very much from Rachel Gentel's testimony and from looking at the timeline of everything that the actual confrontation was a second one initiated by Trayvon Martin. And I think that's pretty much what the jury came to as a conclusion as well.
Well, they came to a very, very pointed one. I mean, a very stressed one. As you see some of the people coming out afterwards saying that they wish that they had at least done one of the charges because once again, like I said, and I don't have a problem saying it. If you follow me down a dark street and you don't tell me you're block watch or that you're some kind of security and you keep following me and I move out of your way and you still come follow me, I hide and you follow me some more or you run after me, I'm going to blast you. So I'm just saying, because I think you mean me harm. I'm afraid of that. You don't have that right in my book because that's stalking, and you're not telling me why you're following me then. And so even if we have to go back and revisit these laws, we have to have some sort of parity where people are not going to be able to just be harassed a certain way, because that's harassment to me. You understand where I'm coming from?
I do, but we're talking here now two different things. We're looking at the profiling on one side. The stand your ground, which, as you said earlier, I agree with you, had nothing to do with this case.
Right.
The profiling element, we're always going to get it. You get it as a black man. I got it particularly as an Arab American after 9/11. Picture walking up, it's 2 days, it's a week after 9/11. You check in at an airline counter and you go up there and say, "Hi, my name is Masada Yub and I have two handguns because I have to fly with firearms."
Hey, exactly. How long do we have you?
I know the feeling, brother.
How long do we have you for?
As long as you like.
Okay, well, can you hold on through our news break and we'll be right back with you?
You got it.
Nice new Tracy and Friends.
From Youngstown Warren, the home for afternoons with Tracy and Friends. News Talk 600 WSOM.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daniela Bellotta. The NSA surveillance program, including its massive collection of phone records, being torn apart at a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing. Chairman Patrick Leahy says enough is enough.
This program is not effective. It has to end. So far, I'm not convinced by what I've seen.
But security officials insist they're necessary to thwart terror plots. The Transportation Safety Agency, meantime, being questioned by Congress about a scathing report which found nearly 2,000 cases of screeners sleeping and letting relatives bypass checkpoints.
The recommended punishment, anywhere from a 14-day suspension to outright firing. Many screeners got nothing more than a letter of reprimand. There are 56,000 screeners at the nation's airports, most of them doing their job as expected, but the TSA continues to have a very persistent problem with those screeners who simply are not.
That's ABC's Lisa Stark. When it comes to choosing which hospital is best for surgery, Consumer Reports, as Doris Peter says, they found
hospitals with good reputations didn't perform as well as we had expected. So one, for example, Hospital for Special Surgery is one of them. Massachusetts General is another. And you can, you know, take a look at our ratings. Those are the two that stand out in my mind. Also, Johns Hopkins is another one that didn't perform as well as we had expected.
Finding a job has been hard work for many, but that seems to be changing.
Economic growth slowed down during the first half of this year, falling to about 1.5%, but that hasn't hurt the employment market.
The job numbers are hanging in there.
Mark Zandi, chief economist with Moody's Analytics, says the ADP survey finds private employers added 200,000 new jobs last month.
That's consistent with the job growth we've been getting over the past 3, 6, 12, 24 months.
One change in this report, more construction jobs as the housing market improved. Richard Davies, ABC News.
Thumbbells, a British mobile company, has come up with a miniature weight to strengthen our texting muscles. This is ABC News.
Futures and options trading involves substantial risk and is not suitable for all investors.
Fire the stockbroker and hire yourself. I'm Larry Levin, and I've been on the trading floor for 23 years. I was one of the biggest traders in the S&P pit. I'm also the president of Trading Advantage, the leading educational firm teaching people how to become professional day traders. Now, for a limited time, I'm offering one of the trading techniques I use to make $1.9 million for free. Get started right now by calling 800-288-0092. Leave your email address on my voicemail, and I'll email you my free trading technique and daily insider's market report at no cost to you. This is the very information I use to build my fortune.
I was getting ready to retire. I still needed to make extra income, but I didn't want to work for anyone else. Because of Larry and his excellent instructors, I could trade successfully for myself, and I'll never have to work for someone else again.
Fire the stockbroker and hire the most dependable person you know, you. Again, call in the next 90 minutes, leave your email address on my voicemail, 800-288-0092.
Futures and options trading involves substantial risk and is not suitable for all investors.
An operator of TGI Fridays restaurants in New Jersey has agreed to pay a big fine. ABC's Aaron Katursky tells us it's over cheap booze passed off as the good stuff.
It was Operation Swill by New Jersey's Alcoholic Beverage Control that caught several TGI Fridays restaurants serving cheap substitutes to customers who ordered top-shelf liquor. The franchisee, Briad Group, has agreed now to pay a $500,000 fine. The attorney general says should send a message to every bar and restaurant that drink substitution will not be tolerated. Nearly two dozen other establishments were caught filling premium brand bottles with cheaper booze, and the investigation is ongoing.
The National Zoo could have a pregnant panda. Zoo officials have closed part of its panda house to the public because its female giant panda is showing some signs she may be pregnant. And a spokeswoman says that Mei Xiong has started to build a nest. They're now monitoring her hormone levels. A cub she delivered in 2005 has been one of the zoo's most popular attractions. Daniela Bellotta, ABC News.
Do you have unfiled tax returns?
The Chevy model year-end event is going on now at your local Chevrolet dealer. Test drive any of their 12 vehicles, like the EPA-estimated 34-mile-per-gallon Chevy Malibu. Visit your local Chevy dealer today. Visit fueleconomy.gov for details.
Broadcasting from the Ford Studios, things are heating up this summer at your Northeast Ohio Ford dealer. Take advantage of the spectacular summer deals, including the Ford F-150. For more details, visit driveoneohio.com.
Putting America and our valley back to work. Recognizing local companies and business owners that are generating new ideas and innovative concepts that are helping to lead our valley's workforce in the new economy.
Like ETI Technical College, creating quality programs in demand fields.
with options that save you time and money.
We offer several different programs, law, business, medicine, web design, accounting, some skilled trades. We give the students an opportunity to focus the curriculum solely around their area of interest, trimming away a lot of the fat, you know, saving them time, saving them money. Two things as you get older, you're going to wish you had more of is time and money. And a college like ETI is able to save you both.
Putting America and our valley back to work. To find out how your business can be a part of our program, call 330-783-1000. That's 330-783-1000.
Steering Compressor, proud sponsor of Putting America and our valley back to work.
Mark Levin is on the radio.
We are going to come at you politically. I wish I could do everything possible to sabotage your agenda because your agenda is anti-American, anti-free market, and anti-private property because your agenda is an attack on the individual. I personally will do whatever I can to sabotage such an agenda, to obstruct it, to divert it, because I'm coming after you all the time.
Weekdays from 6 to 9 p.m. on News Talk 600 WSOM.
You're listening to the new home for the Sean Hannity Radio Show, News Talk 600 WSOM.
Welcome to Afternoons with Tracy and Friends, the local talk show that stimulates your mind and keeps you thinking about things going on in your world. From local issues to topics of global importance, Tracy and Friends keeps you informed and keeps the conversation going. Call to talk to Tracy and Friends at 347-945-5229, 330-781-9600, or toll free at 1-866-530-WSOM. Listen online at tracyandfriends.com or at 600WSOM.com. And now, here's Tracy Winbush.
And we're back once again, Afternoon with Tracy and Friends, here on WSOM 600 AM. Give us a call here on our local lines, 330-781-9600, and on Blog Talk Radio at 1-347-945-5229. And I hope that we haven't lost all our people today because of the computer glitch online. But it's okay. We will handle it either way it goes because we know we have our listeners here. And once again, we're talking to Mr. Massad Ayoub, who is a law enforcement as far as it comes to. Say it one more time, Mr. Ayoub.
Hey, I hope you can hear me okay. My phone dropped
you
the
are,
call and
yeah,
I had to redial.
We saw you come back in. We got you.
Okay, good.
Mm-hmm.
Where were we?
Your specialty is what now?
Use of force.
Use of force. And so that would include all of what we're talking about. And, you know, here's the thing. This man is the expert. And my opinion is my opinion. If I come up against the law, I will come up against the law. And if I go to, I already owe Sticks a steak dinner.
That's right. You do. Me and Tracy both.
No. Tracy's not getting a steak dinner. Okay. So you and your wife, you know, that's going to be a different thing. But no, Tracy's not going to get a steak. I hope you're listening, Tracy, because you're not going to get a steak dinner, okay? Just know that that's the way it is. Okay.
Now,
go ahead.
Now elaborate on the self-defense and stand your ground, because we've heard an awful lot of people they're saying, well, this means you can start a fight with somebody, and if you're getting your behind kicked, you can pull out your gun and shoot them.
Actually, no. The stand your ground law does not apply if you are the initial aggressor. What's happening is, and it gets a little bit complicated, let's say I start a fight with you. It was my fault. You defend yourself, and I realize I'm losing. I turn and run. At that point, you are not allowed under stand your ground to continue to pursue me. You have already won the fight. Any additional punishment, you now are seen as the aggressor in a second conflict. But to say that someone can start a fight and then, if they're losing, kill the other guy and get away with it, frankly, no. Remember, the starting of the fight is the initial assault. It's not words. It's not provocation of suspicion. The way the law sees the actual fight, the person who starts the fight is the person who initiates the physical hostilities with either threat or actual assault.
Yeah, see, I think that's the disconnect with the Zimmerman-Martin deal.
Yes, because I certainly consider Zimmerman the initial aggressor, and only for one reason. There's one reason why he's the aggressor. And he did, for one of my callers, we do have proof that he ran after him. First of all, the transcripts show Zimmerman calls in, tells the people, I'm watching him now. He's behind the houses or up under the eaves of a house, which he had told his girlfriend he was going to try to lose this guy. And so he's out of the way, trying to get out of the way. And Zimmerman's there, and he says, oh, he's coming right toward me. And then he says, oh, he's running. And that's when Zimmerman starts, you hear, and he gets out of breath. And he says, are you following him? And he says, yeah. He said, we don't need you to do that. Now, we can pick it up from there. That's what made him the aggressor to me. And that's, like I said, for being in that position, if he had said one thing, I'm Block Watch. What are you doing here? Over. If he had aggressed him then, he was justified totally in shooting Trayvon Martin. If after he did those things, that was it. But he didn't do that. He didn't do that. Here it is. You have a guy behind you that you don't know whether he's Jeffrey Dahmer or John Wayne Gacy. Okay, so you're not safe in that position. So nobody wants to see that part. That's my argument all along. And with the other caller from 440, go ahead. You can make me wrong. It's okay. I've already lost steak dinner, so it's okay. Go ahead, Mr. Go ahead, sir. I'm sorry.
You'll have to tell me more about the steak dinner, Ben.
Well, if you come, you get one, too.
When the trial started, we made a private bet amongst ourselves because Tracy and I both said that there was no way that they were going to find Zimmerman guilty of murder, too.
Mm-hmm.
And Jeff was convinced that they would.
No, I said manslaughter. I said they're going to reduce it to manslaughter. And I lost that all the way. But either way, I lost, so it doesn't matter. But go ahead, my friend.
I stopped trying to predict jury verdicts 25 years ago when we had a case where the jury in Texas came in with a conviction for murder and a recommended sentence of probation.
Wow.
What were the circumstances behind that?
What you had was one attorney who had shot and killed another attorney. Some of my friends said, well, lawyer kills lawyer. That's kind of like the Iraq-Iran war. Who cares which one wins?
Yeah,
but basically, the deceased was a law school close friend of the attorney who wound up having to kill him. Unknown to the defendant, this guy had a long history of paranoid schizophrenic behavior, had been unable to hold a job. And this guy, out of sympathy, took him in and gave him a job in his law firm. On the night in question, there was a party at the law firm after hours, and they were celebrating the fact that the defendant had just turned 50. He was in a new marriage. He was expecting a baby, and life was pretty good for him. And nobody at the time realized that his friend, the guy he'd taken in, saw this in his ill mind as his nose being rubbed in his own lack of success. And he basically asked the defendant to go into a private office and talk to him for a minute, started screaming at him, and then pulled a gun on him. And our guy, thinking he's about to die, snatched his pistol out of his desk drawer and shot and killed the other man. He was charged with murder. And The interesting thing was it happened at a drinking party during the, the after hours, and our guy had been drinking. When the officers got there, at one point, one of the officers asked him a question, and he said, "How would I know I was drunk?" Now, our reconstruction, using the standard charts of drinks per hour with body weight, how much food you've had, and all of that, indicate that our guy was probably at a 0.09% blood alcohol content, which at that time would not actually have been legally drunk under Texas law. It was 0.10 then. It's 0.08 now, as it is in most states. But basically, when we got that strange verdict, the conviction for murder and the recommendation of probation, both of the attorneys said, "Your Honor, we would like to talk to the jury about this." And the judge said, "I'd kind of like to hear about this myself." So basically, I wasn't there. I heard it later from the attorneys. Everybody goes back into the jury room, and the foreman of the jury said, "Well, Mr. Beach, the prosecutor, he said, you told us at the beginning of trial we had to send a message to the people of Dallas. And the message was, you can't kill somebody and get away with it, even if you're a rich, powerful lawyer." And Mr. Caperton, Charles Caperton was the defense lawyer, said, "You told us at the beginning of trial that we had a right to defend ourselves any place, any time. And we had to send a message to that effect to the people of Dallas. And Judge, you told us we had to judge to the standard of what would a reasonable and prudent person have done. Well, we thought, heck, we can't send this guy to prison. We would have shot the guy ourselves." Yeah. "But at the same time, he said he was drunk. And you want us to send a message to the people of Dallas? How can you be reasonable when you say you're drunk? And the message we're sending to the people of Dallas is, don't be getting drunk and killing folks in Dallas, Texas." And I tell you, the judge and neither of the lawyers ever saw that one coming.
Yeah.
Neither, of course, did I.
Yeah, that's really, that's an interesting way of looking at it. It really is.
Yeah, that's different. Definitely different. Well, anyway, like I said, in this case, I don't know what to really say, because these laws, you know, can be subjective as far as whenever you have a jury or not, and probably up under a judge, something else may have happened if it was just a judge. I think in the Florida case of Stand Your Ground, I'm not a Stand Your Ground, but it's Florida case. See, I'm doing it too because the media just keeps slamming that in your head. In the Florida case of self-defense, I think the judge was absolutely off her rocker in some things she did during that trial. I think that the prosecution was very dishonest in their prosecution of that case. And I think that as a result, the people, you know, came to the conclusion that they did. I mean, without going to a lesser charge. Go ahead.
You can't fool a jury, my brother. What I tell my students is, you know, they tell them in law school the old joke that a jury is 12 people too stupid to get out of jury duty. I have never bought that. There's nobody too stupid to get out of jury duty if they want to. You talk to the people who serve, and they'll tell you they did it out of a sense of duty, and they're acutely aware that someone's life is in their hands, and
right,
they do their darndest to do the right thing. My fellow New Hampshire man, Robert Frost, I think, said it better. His definition of a jury was 12 people assembled to determine who had the best attorney. My definition is it's a 12-headed creature. It's got a collective IQ well above 1,200. When you look at how many, although this was a fairly young jury in Florida, very often the average age of the jury will be older than the average age of the general public, because there's proportionally more retired people who have time to serve, and it's not a hardship for them and their families.
Right.
So with 12 people, you can have as much as 500 years of collective life experience. And most important, you've got 12 separately functioning BS detectors, at least some of which are going to be turned on at any given moment in the trial. And here there are six instead of 12. But given the evidence, I honestly think they came to the conclusion that they had to balance between the evidence and the law.
Now, is six people the standard jury in Florida, or was this some kind of a special case?
It is Yeah, in Florida, that's a standard criminal jury unless you have a death penalty case, in which case it goes up to 12.
Right, and this was not death penalty, and which I remember them saying. That's very interesting. Now, what are you seeing then? Because I don't know what side of the political spectrum you might be on, and I'm not telling you to say, but what do you think of then Stand Your Ground being pushed out here like it was after the trial was over?
Well, I don't think pushing Stand Your Ground out of the way does any good for anyone. You and I have discussed earlier, and really no one discussing this case can get away from it, the element of profiling, the element of race as it affects justice. And particularly in the American South in the last century, there has been a hell of a lot of injustice toward black defendants. And I don't think anyone's going to argue that.
Right.
Interesting thing, though, as far as the Stand Your Ground, 2 points I'd like to make. One, you and your listeners can go to the splendid research that's been done on this by the Tampa Bay Times newspaper. They tracked every single Stand Your Ground case there's been since the new law came in anywhere in the state of Florida. One very interesting thing they found out was it is actually slightly more beneficial to the black community than the Caucasian.
37% of the cases.
Hundreds of cases that they've looked at. But what they found with that was 53% of the white defendants who requested the Stand Your Ground defense were exonerated. 55% of the black defendants were exonerated.
Right.
You also see where, you know, some of the real horror stories that led to Stand Your Ground in the first place, people being accused of criminal action when in fact they acted in self-defense. The classic case that's going right now in Florida at the appellate level is Marisa Alexander. If your listeners aren't familiar with her, Marisa Alexander is an early 30s black woman in Jacksonville, Florida. She had a long history of being violently battered by the abused husband, the abusing husband, who at one time admitted under oath, yeah, I beat the hell out of her. They have become estranged. She's living elsewhere, and she's gone back to what was their mutual home to retrieve some possessions. He becomes violently aggressive toward her. She tries to leave. She goes to her car, which is in the garage, tries to drive away, can't. What he has not told her is the garage door is not working, and she is literally trapped in the garage, which is a part of the house, so she is essentially trapped in that place with the abuser. Now, she has a license to carry a gun under Florida law and has one with her in the car. She is deathly afraid that he's going to attack her again when she goes back inside, as she has to, and she arms herself. He does attack her, and she fires a warning shot. Now, the prosecutor in the Zimmerman case, the special prosecutor, Alexander Corey, was at that time the prosecutor in Duval County, which is where Jacksonville is. Under her, Marisa Alexander was prosecuted for firing that warning shot, and under the Florida Mandatory Sentencing Act, minimum mandatory sentencing, firing a gunshot during a crime is a minimum mandatory 20 years. So here we have this young mother in her early 30s, right now in prison, serving 20 years for firing a warning shot that harmed no one, and did, in fact, exactly what she was trying to do. It frightened the man into moving away from her and no longer trying to attack her. I consider that an absolute outrage. The Florida Civil Liberties Union considers that an absolute outrage. And, in fact, they have called for Angela Corey to be taken off the next racially charged case that's going on in Jacksonville. The Dunn case, the man who fired into the car with the black teenagers, that began with a dispute over loud music. And I think had Marisa Alexander been allowed the Stand Your Ground defense, which which, you know, failed her, she would not now, in my opinion, be in prison.
How can that possibly be that happened? And why isn't there any fast track for somebody that's going through that? Because that was a total miscarriage of justice there. You're getting your behind kicked, and you don't even aim the gun at the person. You shoot up in the ceiling is where she's shot. And you know, here it is. She gets charged with that. Why was there a charge in the first place? And how could you say that under a crime? Well, she wasn't committing a crime. He was committing a crime. He was committing an assault.
Well, I cannot speak for Angela Corey. Corey said, and I have not seen the forensics, I'm not involved in the case myself, Ms. Corey said that the shot was fired past his head, not into the ceiling, and ricocheted up. Well, the point is, the shot still goes past the head and strikes no one, and she testified that she fired it as a warning shot. Now, while the warning shot is generally not a wise thing to do, it's not illegal in the same sense that Zimmerman following rather than pursuing Trayvon Martin was legal but may not have been the tactically soundest thing for him to do. So we kind of see a pattern there. If the tactics go bad and someone complains about you, Angela Corey will charge you to the max. Now, that's only a sample of two cases, but so far I see that as a bit of a pattern. But essentially, we saw the same prosecutor thinking the same way in both of those cases.
That is fantastic, and that I don't know how that can be done, because to me that has to be what did the lawyers file against him? They need to go after the actual judge in that case.
Are there appeals on stand your ground hearings in Florida?
She was convicted by a jury. Hang on just one second.
Okay.
Sorry, our vehicle just crossed the line into Maryland, where I am legal to carry, and my girlfriend is not, so she just transferred her pistol over to me. Hang on.
Well, I know how that works. I have to go through the great state of Illinois to get out to see my daughter.
Oh, my God.
But within a year, you'll be eligible for a $300 non-resident Illinois carry permit.
Oh, wow.
The answer is on the appeal. There is an appeal now going, and I think if your listeners do a Google search for Marisa Alexander, they'll probably find the defense fund if they'd like to donate to that appeal. That said, I don't think there's any comeback on the judge. It was a very, very quick deliberation by the jury, something like 12 minutes, which kind of tells me somebody had their mind made up and didn't spend a lot of time, obviously, deliberating.
Yeah,
I would like that is one case I would like to see go back and give the criminal justice system another chance to make sure it's done right.
I would as well. You have a caller interested in the question, sir. 626,
sure.
You're in the air.
Yeah, it's Kofi the Man out there in California. I think that the Jordan Davis case, the guy that you have with you there, had mentioned that. You know, briefly, just mention the individual's name. But I think that the Jordan Davis case is quintessential, really what Standing Ground is really all about or true about. I know that, you know, they have researchers that some black folks have benefited. I don't know what, you know, what the idea of benefit is. But, you know, quintessential of Standing Your Ground is basically a response to the anti-lynching laws that the government, the U.S. government had passed. Where, you know, since Jim Crow and, you know, up through that you could pretty much, civilians can just pretty much lynch black individuals on the street as will until, you know, anti-lynching laws kind of crack down on that. And I think, you know, with the exception of, you know, Emmett Till, where they, you know, return to doing that again. And I think that basically, you know, how the police have had the green light to pretty much go ahead and assassinate black men on the street and then say, oh, I thought he had a gun, I thought he was on PCP, you know, so on and so forth. The same old, you know, the same old dialogue that they use consistently to get away with killing black people on the regular in the courtroom. They pretty much transferred that same, you know, innocent until proven guilty to the civilian. The civilian has the will that the civilian ground gives them the way. You have the will, we give you the way. The Jordan Davis case highlights essentially what it is standing ground wants to do. Well, you can just go out there, harass somebody, say, I thought he had a gun, and go ahead and kill them. And the thing, the only thing that, you know, that stand your ground guy did, he shot in a car of four black men. He only killed one. And essentially what the stand your ground law does is it encourages white men who, you know, have a concealed carry permit to go out and assassinate underage black boys who don't, because of the age, don't have the right to carry. So you know they're going to be unarmed. So, you know, like the criminal going into an area where, you know, there's a gun control in that area. You're going there, you know, they don't have guns. So you essentially see a young black man, you know he doesn't legally have a right to carry. And so you just go in there, you have a right to carry, and say, oh, I thought he had something and I killed him. Essentially, green light. They give you the will. You have the will. Here's the way.
Yeah.
White folks are afraid of that coming. Majority, minority. And here's a way to help them trim that possibility one dead Negro at a time.
Well, do you want to take that?
Let me address that.
Very
first,
well.
The caller covered a pretty wide waterfront there.
Right,
The Jordan Davis case, that would be the Dunn case in Jacksonville, sir, that began with the loud music and the guy firing into the car. I guess the caller's gone.
No.
In that case, it's my understanding the guy is still in jail without bond. And he is essentially, if he figured I can shoot this guy and get away with it, he made an incredibly stupid mistake, because there are at least three witnesses who are testifying that they were in that car, there was no gun, and he's going to have a very uphill fight of it. Let me tell the caller where I was saying the stand your ground benefiting the black community. Black guys, white guys, yellow guys, and brown guys and gals all have occasion to use firearms in self-defense. If you have particularly a part of the country where historically in the past predominantly white police did not listen to black folks who defended themselves righteously, the stand your ground is a tremendous defense for them. What I was saying with the Tampa Bay Times study, there's about 2% greater black defendants who fired in self-defense who have been exonerated under the stand your ground law there. I believe it's, I'd have to go back and check, but I think it's 776-032 that provides for the hearing. Then have white defendants who have claimed the same protection. But for anyone to say, all you've got to do is say, I did it in self-defense, and that's accepted, that's not the case at all. Any homicide today is one of the most deeply investigated incidents in law enforcement. It's investigated every bit as deeply when it's the officer who pulls the trigger, because the cops know they're going to get, you know, the attack by the newspapers, they're going to get the massive civil lawsuit in court alleging excessive force. And these things are deeply, deeply investigated. We know that the Zimmerman case, for example, was investigated more than a year ago by FBI under Eric Holder's Department of Justice, and the entire squad of agents they sent down to talk to everyone who ever had ever known George Zimmerman came up negative. What they came up with was George Zimmerman himself is 1/8 black, and hell, 50 years ago in Sanford, Florida, they would have made him use blacks-only bathrooms, for heaven's sake.
That's right.
He was essentially a mixed-race man. And while the press has made a huge deal out of race, I see nothing in the case that said it ever motivated Zimmerman in any way. He had mentored young black kids. Some of the people who spoke for him were black friends and neighbors of his who had nothing bad to say about him.
The one thing that I'll say is this was the real travesty in this case was the race baiters getting in it from the beginning to make a dollar. And that, excuse my mouth, but that pissed me off because they ruined the ability for this to be a teaching moment, any other type of moment about how things happen in America. You have to understand that also when you look at that Rodney King, every police officer, after beating the living daylights out of him repeatedly for about a half hour, still were exonerated themselves. You have to understand that black people don't necessarily trust the police. And, you know,
you said somebody was a race baiter. Exactly
Al
is
Sharpton.
It? I know that's a term
Al
that you...
Sharpton.
I didn't say who. I know that's a term used by you, Uncle Tom's, to bootlick with your white cracker.
Well, sir,
I'm asking you to define your term.
Uncle Tom helped you stay alive, and I'm still trying to help you stay alive. So
I can throw one or two out myself.
Once again, race baiters like Al Sharpton. Okay.
Do you have a definition of your term?
Al Sharpton went down to Florida and created a debacle to where this could not possibly come out right any way that it came out. And you have to understand.
I just asked you for a definition of your term, man.
Like
you
I said,
give me a definition of your term.
A race baiter is one that comes in and stirs up racial discourse and discord. And that's what Al did in this case. Al Sharpton was not this person 25 years ago when I saw him at an NAACP dinner here speaking, and his first book that he wrote talking about self-help and self-reliance in the black community. No, it has changed. His whole thing has changed. I don't respect the man for this part of him that I'm seeing. It is ridiculous to do this to get a paycheck. Okay,
according to your definition, if one was asked to come down there and to speak on behalf of somebody's murdered kid.
Okay.
Then
speak on behalf of the murdered kid
If somebody asked you to, Jeff, come down here and speak on X,
I'm
Y,
I'm not
going to
race bait, Kavina, man. I'm not going to race bait.
So
that's my point. My point
I'm
is, there's a
well,
way
they asked him to come down here to speak
mm-hmm.
on the kid that got murdered,
and so he rabble roused, so he got the whole community up in arms. So my point is, how you do something is everything, okay? And it's just like you want to have a dialogue with me, and I'm going to be bigger than the name you called me. And,
throw out the names. I was cool with it.
You called me an Uncle Tom. I called him a race baiter. That's not a derogatory term. That's not a derogatory term. That's an action. Okay, so I'm not going to do this right now.
That's a term only used by Uncle Tom's.
Doc, then
you don't hear that coming from nobody else today.
Read the story of who Uncle... Read the story of who Uncle Tom was and then come back with a...
We're
going to keep Uncle Tom because I am an Uncle Tom.
Let's see. I'm one that cares about my people
and I want them safe and free. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to do here. We're not going to waste any more time with you for right now. We'll get this on another time with you when you want to talk about Sambos and all of this other stuff that don't matter. But because it doesn't matter. I'm not buying that mess. This is what I'm dealing with, my friend, because it's a very delicate situation to talk about, these matters in the eye of race when, yes, in our community, injustice happens more sometimes than justice does. And so, and then you have people that blow up you know, the small things, and they cried, the sky is falling, when the sky is not falling. And then so therefore, you have this real big fight between people, and it doesn't make sense to me. But that, you understand what's going on and why he brought that question, right, Mr. Ayoub?
Yeah, I do. And essentially, all I can say is I've carried a badge for 39 years. I would like to believe the perceptions of injustice toward blacks are incorrect. They certainly are for me and the officers that I work with. Mm-hmm. At the same time, we cannot ignore some of the history of the Jim Crow years. We cannot ignore the history when the Klan was riding high in the Deep South. And we especially cannot ignore the fact that whatever color you are, there are only 800,000 cops in a country of 320 million, and you cannot expect a policeman to be there when you're needed. I will say this to the listeners. Your host is fighting for you and for your right to protect yourselves and your families from the most dangerous violent crime that there is out there. He's fighting against the people who say you are not competent to protect yourselves. If you want to cast this, as the last caller did, in a racial light, I'd suggest you look up the history of armed African Americans during the years of the Freedom Riders. Remember that Charlton Heston, who for many years was the face of the National Rifle Association, marched alongside Dr. King during the Freedom Marches. Read the history of Dr. Martin Luther King. He was a Republican gun owner himself. And when they bombed his house and he requested a permit to carry a gun to protect his family, he was denied by the authorities simply because he was a black man. Your host on the show is fighting for your rights. Your host on the show is fighting to keep that sort of thing back in history and out of our presence. And I applaud him for that.
Thank you so much. Go ahead, Stixon. We got 412 up right after.
It's my understanding that the very first gun control law in the United States was written to keep African Americans from carrying a firearm.
Primarily, that's true. The great majority of the heritage that all of us came to within living memory, that in most jurisdictions you needed a permit to carry a gun, came out of the Reconstruction years. And essentially, the old slaveholder types and the newborn Klansmen said to themselves, holy crap, the people we have abused and oppressed are free. What if they have guns? We got to do something. Wait, we know. We'll create a system where you need a permit to have a gun, and we'll make sure we elect good white men like us to be the issuing authorities, wink, wink, nod, nod, and we'll still have the guns, and they won't. And if you look back at it, that is exactly the history. In New York City, the Sullivan Act that made it a felony to carry a gun without a permit goes back to the year 1911, and it was a similar type of oppression with a different color on it. The rich power brokers at Tammany Hall did not want anybody but their cronies carrying guns. They didn't want these white trash Irish and these white trash Italians and Sicilians carrying guns.
Right.
No, just us good people. And that whole may issue system, that is, the issuing authority may at their discretion issue the license to carry a gun to protect yourself and your family, essentially became a code word for we'll give you the permit if you are white, male, rich, politically connected, a celebrity, or have recently contributed a large amount of money to the sheriff's campaign or the mayor's campaign. And in essence, the coming of the shall issue carry, which makes it mandatory to issue to any applicant who has a clean criminal record, no history of mental illness, was essentially reform legislation that basically brought another level of freedom, another level of empowerment that hitherto had been available only to the rich and the privileged.
412, you're in the air, and the rest of the callers at 1 if you want to speak.
Good afternoon, Jeff and Stix. How are you guys doing this afternoon?
Good, Alex.
Great. You touched on something I was actually calling in about. For one thing, I wanted to kind of disagree with you, Jeff, because you said something that just kind of irked me a little bit about Trayvon Martin thing, because you're saying, well, Sharpton went down there and before they could even have a trial and all this stuff, but I believe in staying your ground. I think that the law is a good law, although I think it's unnecessary, which I'll get to in a second, but I think it's a good law. But at the same time, it would have never came to trial if it wasn't for that national attention that people like Al Sharpton gave to it or forced to be given to it. This would have never have been tried in court if not for the point.
You go down there and make that happen, but you do not have to go down there and create battle lines to do it. There was a reason why he wasn't charged in the first place, and it came along the same reason why the people came back with a not guilty plea, and it was evidence, regardless of whether the evidence of whether Trayvon was directly threatened or not came into being. It had nothing to do with that. It had to do with the fact that because Trayvon was dead, there was no sheer evidence of what happened there. And that by default, the jurors, they can't say, well, I don't know, I think he did something wrong anyway, because yeah, man, they caught the man lying several times. But the thing is he got away with it because of that. Al Sharpton created battle lines. That's my point.
I agree with that, technically, why he got away with the murder. I mean, I for the most part, I understand why the jury went the way that they did. No argument there. But I think that still most people had the sense that, okay, well, maybe he shouldn't be charged with murder, but the guy should, he shouldn't have followed the guy. Something should happen to this guy. I think most people in America, no matter what side they're on, I mean, I think that most people still feel like, okay, something should happen to this guy. I mean, there should be some legal recourse, and, the fact that he just walks away completely free after, a little kid.
I'm in full agreement with that, because like I said, if it doesn't happen to anything else, but we get the legislator to go in and say, if you're on a freaking block watch, you must identify yourself. Stop this foolishness. You're not sitting there and following somebody around without a doggone uniform or a light on your car, and then you're going to be block watch. No, you have to say you're block watch. Damn it! Excuse my mouth. Because that's what pissed me off about this case the most. And please forgive me, people, for my language there, because that's what bothered me about this man walking. Not the fact that I thought he hated black people, because I don't think he did. I think he was just stupid. But I'll defer to my guest here today. Guest, go ahead. You handle what I said, because I'm trying to not be emotional about it here now.
Yeah, basically, I understand where you're both coming from. I would say to the caller, I think I caught the name as Alex, that the public deserves answers. At the same time, the reason you didn't get answers sooner, the reason it took 17 months and this horrendously expensive trial that came out of taxpayers' pockets and has divided our country, is that historically, the police ethos has been, we do not try our cases in the press. They were still investigating it. They didn't arrest because they didn't have probable cause. As time went on, no probable cause developed that would warrant arrest. Basically, virtually every shred of fact evidence supported Zimmerman's contention that he was attacked and was getting his brains beat out on the sidewalk and had no choice but to shoot. If at the beginning somehow a press conference could have been called and the state's attorney and the chief of police and the lead investigator sat down and said, look, we're here in a public forum to answer all your questions, we understand your concerns, and if they had laid the case out the way it was laid out, hopefully not taking 3 weeks, but I think it could have been explained very effectively in an afternoon. I think America would have understood, just as, you know, everyone said if this guy is acquitted, there are going to be riots. It's going to be, the whole country will look like Los Angeles after Rodney King. And we know that did not happen. We know that the country in general and the black community in particular has understood. The system has spoken. The guy was taken to trial. And I think that anyone who has watched the trial understands why, as our host has explained. Could it have been done better? Sure. If the self-identification point, every year in America we have what are called blue-on-blue shootings, where one police officer inadvertently kills another because of mistaken identity. And it's always the plainclothes officer getting killed by the cop in uniform. And the reason is the one in uniform comes in late. He's only seen a part of the action. He sees man with a gun there now. And the plainclothes cop, when he hears, drop the gun, he's got so much ego invested in being the good guy that he thinks everybody in the world can see that halo over his head. He doesn't have to identify. He turns toward the guy who yelled. When you turn, the gun turns with you. The officer perceives that the man he's challenged is now coming toward, swinging the gun toward him to shoot him. And he shoots and kills what turns out to be an off-duty or plainclothes policeman. What you had here, you may well have had. With Trayvon Martin gone, we have not heard his side of it. He may well have perceived, I'm being stalked by someone who has ill will toward me. We know from his testimony what Zimmerman perceived. The ducking under the eaves, et cetera, the slow, aimless movements that he initially saw during a driving rainstorm, that's aberrant behavior. Most of us will, you know, if we're going to duck under eaves, we'll duck under something that will actually stop the rain. And if you look at the pictures of where Trayvon Martin was, there were windows but no eaves. There was no shelter where he stopped from the rain. And the guy who lives in that community says, okay, this looks suspicious to me. This looks like a burglar casing, you know, his next hit. We've had many burglaries and one home invasion in this community. And he does not realize that, you know, that he is not readily identifiable as the good guy. Like the cop who has his ego invested in being a policeman, the guy on Neighborhood Watch sees himself as certified card-carrying good guy. Not having been trained to announce and confront, there's no plan in his computer that says for him to blurt out Community Watch. Remember, he's trying to keep an eye on the guy. There's no evidence that he was trying to actually contact, speak to, or face or lay hands on Trayvon Martin. He was just trying to keep him in view.
He came face-to-face with him when he said he walked out of the bush. He should have said, I'm block watch. What are you doing here? And so therefore,
we've had 17 months to come to that conclusion. He had one second. And he had not.
Gotcha.
If I was in that situation, after 39 years as a cop, I would follow all those decades of training, and the first thing I would say would be, police. He had not been trained to do that.
Well, I mean, it still doesn't matter. I mean, it's still, you don't take into consideration that you're following somebody, and they may take that as a threat, which I guarantee you, any inner city or any really any black man in America is going to consider that. So, I mean,
so is any white guy.
Well, not really. Not unless he's in the wrong neighborhood, per se, and he's feeling a certain way. Because blacks don't usually just do that to whites and get away with it in the law. You know, but it does happen to vice versa. I've had relatives that were killed, okay, in the South. So you have to understand where I'm coming from to do that. Well, I say this because I'm coming from a place where I've suffered loss because of the craziness like this, okay? I've suffered loss on both sides, white on black and black on black. And so therefore, I'm not trying to be unreasonable about this. Mr. Zimmerman killed a young man because of his own stupidity. It wasn't because of anything else. If I'm getting beat, I'm going to say, look, I'm block watch. Okay, I'm going to say something to make this person get up off me. But he provoked this man, in my opinion, to do this because he came at him, did not identify himself. I try to kill him too. I'm sorry. But go ahead. Wait a minute.
Yeah. Well,
843-196, you're next. And you assume that he had not been following him already when he made the first call into the non.
Yeah, I think that's pretty clear because you don't hear him get out of the car until during that phone call.
Well, I mean, he's still following him. Driving slow in a car is just as bad as getting out the car and falling down the street. Because usually when you follow somebody slow in a car to a black person, you're going to do something to them. There's a double standard we're not considering.
Well, yeah, hold on, that's a double standard. I think white guys would get a little nervous about it, too. Go ahead, Alex.
No, this is Alabama.
Hold on, Alabama. You're not next. It's 843. I think it's South Carolina. 496? Okay, go ahead, Alabama. You're next, then Alex.
Well, my thing is, this is the thing. If you were dead, right, would you want a person who you were innocent, you were going to the store, and because you were walking, and let's be honest, nod, nod, wink, wink, just like he said earlier, because you're black with a hoodie on walking, this guy assumes you're up to no good, and now you're dead. Would you want, do you think that guy should be brought to justice, or if that was your son, daughter, or so, if someone inadvertently, not in a car accident where people are driving, but they're walking, and this person didn't identify themselves, and now they're dead, and he gets off on some formality, and now he's gone. This guy took everything from this young man, and he's dead, and he's coming around here talking about it's God's will. I take that to me. I don't understand how people can just be so, well, let's just be logical. I can't be logical.
That's the stupidity again. That's the stupidity I was talking about again.
I don't understand that. I don't understand how somebody can say, okay, well, you know, Trayvon initiated the second. I'm like, well, Trayvon, why was Trayvon initiating anything in the first place? Because you chased him. So my thing is, I can't understand anybody just dislodging. And then on top of that, the guy is dead, and he wasn't doing anything but walking back to his house. Okay, what do you think? I get offended when I walk through a store, and they chase me through the store. I've been followed through stores with thousands of dollars in my bank account. But they're following me. But then the white guy walks by, they don't follow him. And you expect us black people getting tired of this. So, I mean, don't expect black people to be so logical and understand. We can't understand that. We can't understand because we don't follow you. We don't think like that. But then when you follow us and then one of us winds up dead, oh, well, it was just a formality. I don't care. That guy should have been under the jail if I had something to do with it.
Alabama, aside from the Trayvon Martin case, okay, if you change your practice, it will change the perception, okay?
I'm gonna tell you, I've been picked on. I've been coming from the gym, man. What are you talking about? I've been followed. Alabama, you gotta let him talk. If a person owns their business,
and the majority of stuff that's been stolen out of his business looks like me. If I see somebody come in my store that looks suspicious, yeah, I'm gonna follow him. I wanna find out what's going on. And then that's the way it is, right there, right? I mean, let's be realistic about it. We cannot let ourselves get emotional. You got to think logical in these situations.
Okay, South Carolina, okay. Would you say think logical?
No, we're not doing that.
You going to let this make you,
when you inject.
Okay, I had to shut them down for a second. Mr. Iope, do you want to continue some more with us?
I see both sides of that argument, and Alex and Alabama have just pretty much personified.
Well, Alabama and South Carolina, that was two new callers, yeah.
Okay.
Well, listen, I don't know whether you want to waste more time with us today, but we certainly are enjoying you. I'm enjoying your input and what you've done here, but we're getting ready to go to our top of the hour news break, and if you could either call right back in or hang out with us for at least 15, 20 more minutes, I'd greatly appreciate it.
You got it.
All right, my friend. Afternoon with Tracy and Friends. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Afternoon with Tracy and Friends.
We'll be back.
Listen to Tracy every weekday from noon to 3 on Newstalk 600. Visit our website.
As we went to commercial, that was better timing than usual. I sure can. I will as soon as I'm off this. Thanks. Hello?
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 Hey, you this there? Is Mass. Mass, are you still waiting? Who's this?
Hey, this is South Carolina.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing fine, doing fine. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, for me, you know, when you get into the emotional side of it and you inject emotion into any case, like Rodney King or these high-profile cases, you have a tendency to get sidetracked. Logic tends to get sidetracked, and people tend to think or act more on their emotion instead of with the way the, you know, justice system was set up. It's not set up to deal with things from an emotional level. It's set up to deal with things under the law, and the law is not emotional. The law is logical. So
yeah, I'm afraid that's the truth.
A lot of cases that sound hard and callous, but that's the truth.
Well, the hearts have overridden a lot of brains on both sides of this divide.
Can you hear me?
Yeah,
I can. Yes.
My thing, what I was saying was this. It's one thing to say something is suspicious. It's another thing to see a guy's skin color and say, oh, their people steal, their people do this, so I'm going to follow him. 90% of the times that I've been harassed, followed through stores and things like that, has been because of my skin color. Not because I grabbed something and stuffed it under my shirt, didn't pay for it at the register. They don't see that. They just see a black guy walk in the store, or they see a black guy walking with a hoodie on in the rain, and he's guilty. And so I'm going to follow him because I'm doing a detective work. There was no way Zimmerman could have known any there's nothing to, there's no way just you can look at a guy walking slow and say he's stealing, he's about to steal. Just because he's walking slow, he's on the phone. He was obviously on the phone. So I'm sitting like, okay, he's on the phone, and I just think that, to me, shows a lack of people. It's one thing to be logical, but it's one thing to say, okay, a guy's skin color makes him guilty. That, you know, it's not, it's like you're supposed to just say, okay, well, you got to act a certain way. I disagree with that.
In general, I totally agree with you. In this one, though, if you listen to the call, Zimmerman, apparently the color was not in the forefront. I'm not sure he was 100% certain that Trayvon was black. Color isn't mentioned until the dispatcher asks for a description. And you hear Zimmerman say, I think he's black.
Well,
so that
kind
of tells me that the skin color was not in the forefront of his mind.
Oh, wait. Well, why would he say black, though? Why did he say white?
Because he's asked for a physical description.
I understand, but when he's asked for a physical description,
black,
he says black. Okay, well, I think if he says that, then it means he thought the guy was black in the first place before he called.
No.
Zimmerman himself is an eighth black.
Well, come on. Now, most white people, a lot of white people are an eighth black. That doesn't make him so he understands the plight of the black man. Because, Dwight Eisenhower was an
eighth
black.
Better than
he's
the average.
Black.
He probably understands it better than the average white yuppie. He had been on the forefront of a group that was picketing the Sanford Police Department over a black man who had been beaten by the son of a white police officer in Sanford, and felt that Sanford PD was covering it up. So in that sense, he had been, yeah, if you go back and do a Google search on it, I'm trying to remember the name of the guy, but he had worked with NAACP, trying to get some attention brought to that. He had passed out pamphlets saying this is wrong. This black man was beaten by a white guy whose dad is a cop here, and this needs to be investigated more than it's being.
Why is it that you here you are going that you have to Google search to get this in? Why wasn't he out there? Why hasn't he put that information out there? It's like, I find it hard, you know what I'm saying, because there's so much information out there against him. And then when it came to the case, it was like, well, that was just the media running away with stuff. So now it's like we can't believe anything we see. Now he's supposed to be done pulled somebody's body out of a car before it blew up or something along those lines. But they refused to do a press conference.
For good information on that, if South Carolina, do you have a pen right handy? There's a good site for you. The defense team put a lot of the documentation up on a website called gzlegalcase.com. And the reason it didn't get in was the same reason Trayvon's history with the purple drank and the accusations of the being in possession of stolen jewelry and stuff didn't get in. The character evidence basically is not germane to the issue. He didn't know anything about Trayvon's background. Trayvon didn't know anything about his background. So neither man's background really had anything to do with their interaction during those few minutes that night in Sanford. As you know, that's just how the law works.
Yeah, let me ask you something. This is Alex, and do you accept the testimony of his friend, Rachel Gentile, or whatever her name was, that he was on the phone with?
I have to look at that with a little bit jaundiced eye, because while she's on the witness stand, she admitted to, I'd have to go back and check, but that she had lied about at least four things, maybe six things. And when she says she lies because it's convenient, you got to wonder, is she telling the truth right now? Did you catch when she was on Piers Morgan the day after the acquittal? Okay.
Yeah.
She's pretty much saying she thought that Trayvon struck the first blow and that Trayvon intended to whoop his ass, as she put it. What the law looks at is who initiated the actual physical assault. Guy calling another guy an Uncle Tom on this show, somebody might see as provocation, but the law would not say that allows the host to punch him in the mouth. So while certain things may have led up to it, we can see where the misunderstanding came from, misidentification even, to where it's culpable, to where it's, okay, you got this wrong impression, you need to go to prison for it. That's another deal entirely.
But if
you're on our mind, and giving you a little bit with on your mind, you feel allowing you to call in and tell us what's on your mind. So give me a call here at 330-781-9600. We're having a lively discussion on Stand Your Ground and self-defense and the Trayvon Martin trial. There's plenty of trials to discuss where there's been some, you know, some miscarriages, and there's been some that have been some good trials that would help anybody in the situation if you have a fair area to deal with. And so we are talking now with Mr. Masad Ayoub, who is a specialist in self-defense
and use of force.
And use of force. There we go. All right. Are you guys quiet in the chat room now?
Well, I was in the middle of asking Mr. Masad a question.
You go ahead and ask your question, sir.
In particular, you're saying that, you know, at least his friend Rachel Gentile said that she had, that Trayvon Martin struck George Zimmerman. It's things like this that bother me, because it seems like the same bias like that first juror had when she went on, I think it was Anderson Cooper. And so people would say, well, yeah, I didn't think she was a reliable witness or whatever, the girl he was on the phone with. But then you choose to believe the negative things about Trayvon Martin, as she said. Oh, well, but you believe that Trayvon punched her. Or punched George Zimmerman. You believe that, but you don't believe the rest of her testimony that he was scared and being followed. Or, you know, just things like that really bother me.
Yeah, hard for me to believe any of her testimony after she has testified that she lied about her age. She had lied about being in the hospital when it was time to go to Trayvon's funeral. when she lied to Trayvon's mother because she didn't want to hurt Trayvon's mother's feelings, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's not that I choose to believe what she says. It's that we have to frame it as the jury did with the evidence that's there. There's no evidence indicating that Zimmerman physically assaulted Martin prior to the firing of the single shot. There is ample evidence of Martin having been beating the hell out of Zimmerman. And when you start banging the head against the concrete, it's pretty much the same as taking a big rock and smashing the guy in the head with it. That you cease at that point to be unarmed. It's now the equivalent of an armed assault, what the law calls disparity of force. And at that point, deadly force is absolutely justifiable.
Can I interject right there?
Sure.
Don't forget that for the nose and the back of the head, Zimmerman refused service because he said it wasn't that bad. And so those things, if I was the prosecutor, I would have rammed that home. And that's the part. You're correct about Rich Gentile stories not matching, but neither did Zimmerman's. And he crafted his story because he was well aware of the stand your ground and self-defense law. And he created his own alibi by being able to massage his testimony for those things. Because, you know, like I said, this was a very deep situation. But you go ahead and continue, and then I have a not-so-blind Mike. You're going to be up after Mr. Ayoub finishes his discourse.
I wanted to go a little bit deeper in that into what he was talking about, if I could ask him another question.
Sure.
Because you self-defense. I hear what you're saying, disparity of force and all that stuff. Here's my question, and this just you know, you can remove Trayvon Martin and George Zimmerman from the situation, but if you're cornered by somebody, I would think that, you know, if you feel threatened, you're allowed to use force to back somebody up off of you. I may be wrong, but I don't think that's unlawful. But other than that, the other thing, George Zimmerman did admit that during the altercation that Trayvon Martin noticed that he had a gun. So imagine if you're fighting somebody and you notice that they have a lethal weapon, you're going to try to incapacitate them. So it means nothing that he started, even if he was banging his head against the concrete. I would too if I couldn't get to his gun, and I know he has a gun, and so I'm going to try to incapacitate him. It just seems like nobody is respecting the humanity of Trayvon and only respecting the humanity of George Zimmerman.
Well, that covers a lot of ground. Let me try to address it point by point. To whatever degree Trayvon may have perceived himself as having been cornered, the evidence indicates when he was talking with Rachel that he was very close to the place where he was staying with his dad's girlfriend. He would have, for him to have made it to the confrontation site, he would have had to have doubled back and gone toward Zimmerman's position. So far from being cornered, the body of the evidence indicated that he had turned and moved back purposefully as if to engage Zimmerman. The bit about him going for the gun, Zimmerman's testimony was that this was at the very end and that was the thing that finally drove him to reach down, draw the gun, and fire the shot. The third thing he brought up, the quantity of injury issue. The prosecution did hammer on that. They brought in Dr. Valerie Rao. They brought in the physician's assistant, et cetera, and the paramedics. And they said, well, the skull isn't fractured, the nose isn't broken. That's not enough to warrant deadly force. And that, I'm afraid, was disingenuous. The whole purpose of self-defense, whether it's with your fist or with your gun, is to keep yourself from being injured at all. You don't have to wait till the other man has shot you before you shoot back. You don't have to wait till the other man has stabbed you before you draw your pistol and shoot him before he can reach you with his knife. What's happening here with the head being bounced on the ground, basically probably the only thing that kept the guy's skull from being fractured was the neck muscles are among the strongest in the body. If we're all parents here, we know how the first few months of infancy we have to support the child's head because the neck won't hold it up. And then about by 9 months, the neck muscles essentially have become involuntary, and they hold up a head that weighs 20 to 23 pounds without even thinking about it. As you naturally resist the movement slamming your head into the sidewalk, you're going to be able to mitigate some of the force. But with each successive blow, you're going to be less and less able to mitigate that, and pretty soon your brains are going to be on the sidewalk. So it was both logic, tactics, and the law say you don't have to be shot before you shoot back. You don't have to have your skull fractured. And if you look at the pictures of Zimmerman, the physician's assistant said that she couldn't tell whether the nose had been broken or not. The septum is a small piece of cartilage, and the doctors I've talked to say they often can't tell by x-ray, is it broken? The same is true if you ever had broken ribs and said, hey, doc, I'm really hurting. Doc says, well, I'm looking at the x-ray and they might be broken. The point of it is you're still hurting and having trouble breathing from the broken ribs. In this case, we know there was substantial bleeding. If you look at the pictures of Zimmerman before and immediately after, the nose is swollen to twice or more its normal size. So clearly he's taken a pretty hard hit to the face. You can see both eyes have been blackened, and the lacerations on the back of the head are exactly consistent with Zimmerman's account of the assault.
Except for that by the time that he shot him, he was in the grass, not on the sidewalk anymore.
He had been able to kind of squiggle himself down.
I still don't know how you get one hand loose, cock, you know, because you know an automatic just doesn't just fire.
He was
carrying with a round in the chamber, so all he had to do was
carrying a Glock also, correct, Mossad, which doesn't have
to be a Kel-Tec PF9 seven rounds in the magazine and one in the chamber.
I stand corrected.
I'd like to kind of move this towards all weekend long after the verdict. All I heard about was these crazy people running around, you know, these dirty, hairy wannabes with these concealed carry licenses and all this stuff. Speak as a professional to the mindset of those of us civilians who choose to carry a concealed firearm.
Well, historically, if you're carrying the gun in a state like Florida, where you need the license to do so, essentially you have been checked out by the criminal justice system, and they have determined you to be a certified card-carrying good guy or gal. If you look overall at the percentage of crimes committed by gun permit holders, which has been done, it is a fraction of the percent of crimes committed by the general public at large. The people who carry guns, the people who don't carry guns and are scared of them think, oh, my God, now they will go where angels fear to tread. Now the gun will take over their personality. One psychologist said the trigger will pull the finger. When you deal with armed citizens like yourself, like me, like the people I train, you find it's just the opposite. The gun on your person is a constant reminder that it's a dangerous world. That's a constant reminder that the responsibility that comes with that gun is every bit commensurate with its power. One thing we find is the people who carry guns suddenly realize, you know, when a guy gives me the finger in traffic, I can't flip the bird back at him because now I'm seen as escalating it or keeping the ball rolling. And I know what this guy doesn't. There's a deadly weapon here, and whatever happens could turn into a killing situation. And I have, if anything, more obligation to de-escalate and get out of here.
The
whole dirty Harry thing is coming from people who simply do not understand armed citizens and their mentality.
Right. I heard more than one person say during the trial, well, who with a gun hollers for help? And I kept saying the person that doesn't want to use it.
And that could very well be.
Yeah.
That could very well be so, but once again, you still can say I'm Block Watch, and I think the whole thing is de-escalated. Not so blind, Mike.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, buddy.
Interesting topic. Jeff, I agree with you on one point. I disagree with Alabama on another. And I would like to also ask Mr. Massad a professional question about his expertise as a self-protection instructor. I am blind, sir, and I will tell you that if somebody were following me, it goes beyond black people being creeped out by it, Jeff. I'm sorry. Women would be creeped out by a car slowly rolling along, looking at you through the window, and so would disabled people.
Sure.
And so would anybody unarmed would be very wary, if not fearful, at least wary, going, what is this all about, you know? And there but for the grace of God go I and Trayvon Martin being blind. I remember one time I was standing waiting for a ride to pick me up, and a car pulled up to the curb and tapped the horn. I assumed it was my ride. I hopped into that car, and fortunately, the woman didn't freak out and wasn't armed. She said, "What the hell are you doing in my car?" You know, and you know, and I honestly believe if she were armed, I might have got a second chance to explain being white. But I also know in that part of town, if a black guy had done that, we would have had a Trayvon Martin situation. I'm going back now in the late '60s. This happened, okay? And
yeah, there's no question misunderstandings can occur.
Oh yeah, and so
I think one of the takeaways from this, our host is right, is.
Yeah.
While Neighborhood Watch historically is taught not to confront, the confrontation may occur. If one accepts Zimmerman's account and there's nothing to contradict it, the actual confrontation, the final thing that leads to the shooting, was done by Martin.
Yeah.
If you're trained not to confront, you're not going to be trained what to say during the confrontation.
Right.
I would suggest one of the things that will come out of this is people doing neighborhood watch, volunteer watch, block watch, mm-hmm. whatever they call it in a given community,
mm-hmm.
will be told, if you are approached by the person you're keeping an eye on, identify yourself.
Mm-hmm. And I believe you as a police officer would agree with this.
Hey, not so blind. Give me a few seconds. I got to pay some bills. Be right back. Don't go anywhere, anybody.
Let's talk for a moment about a great doctor.
Hey.
And Mike, what you should have said is, you know, instead of when she asked you, who the hell are you, what are you doing in my car? And you said, who the hell are you, what are you doing in my car?
I should have said, but you just won. Today's your lucky day. I'm a stud. No, I just know that I was in the predominantly black section of town in those days, and I was one block out of the roughest section in our town, so I was close to it, and I had come out of the dentist's office, and I just heard the tap on the horn. After that, when a car pulled up and blew the horn, I never assumed it was for me until they rolled down the window and called me by name after that, because it was pretty frightening for me, you know, going home. I was embarrassed, first of all, you know. But I'm going to ask Mr. Massad, what can disabled people do to protect themselves? Does he have anything? How do you contact him? Does he have any information on that? I'd like to ask him that. And then the other thing is, why would anybody with a gun, which gives you the long-range advantage, why would you close down the distance between somebody, even if you were block watch or not, or police, why would you close down your advantage of distance to where somebody could put their hands on you?
Well, in this case, I don't believe he did. The evidence indicates that he was trying to follow at a distance.
Yeah.
And he describes himself being jumped out of the bushes in the dark. Mm-hmm. And the other guy has already basically closed the gap on him.
Okay. Okay, that makes sense then. Yeah. Because you as a police officer would understand, you just don't give up an advantage of distance like that if you don't have
to. Well, unfortunately, we have to go in and close with them.
Yeah.
But we're also trained to do it and equipped to do it.
They haven't made drone handcuffs yet. So,
well, you know, if you just toss your handcuffs at him and say, here, dude, put these on, he'll say, oh, thanks, run away with your handcuffs and pawn them for $5 tomorrow at the pawn shop. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, and meanwhile, you got to go back and explain to the shift commander why you lost them, and then they take them out of
yep.
the pay next week.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that's before the little discussion about my cowardice and misfeasance of duty.
Yeah. You could explain it as you were fostering police community relations by giving things away. So, but all kidding aside, sir, do you have a website or something? And can you
yes, it's MASS.
Hang on
one
second.
Masada, you sure?
Let me just. I'm using a talking computer, so I'm going to type here, but real quick. But sure. It's MASS.
AD.
AY.
OOB.
OOB.
Group.com. Yeah. Correct.
Great. And would I be able to communicate with you if you have any information regarding how what you think disabled people could do? Like me being blind,
sure.
I won't pack
it. It depends entirely on the disability.
Okay.
If you get to the website, there is an email address to contact me and a phone number.
Perfect. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Oh, my pleasure.
I appreciate that. So how long were you a police officer?
I still am, actually.
Oh, I thought you were retired. I apologize.
39 years.
39 years? Oh, you're just getting started. You just finally figured this stuff out.
My ambition is to be the world's oldest cop.
There you go. Hey, if you love what you're doing, you have a passion for it, you know, why not?
I do it part-time, and that's kept it from burning out.
Yeah.
I've always enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It's satisfying.
It is a tough profession. It's a tough profession because basically we pay you guys to deal with stuff we don't even want to think about exists in our society. And you guys are basically, we've turned you into human garbage men. You clean up the mess around the corner and we don't have to see it in the street.
Or 600WSOM.com.
I hear you.
Now, here's Tracy.
And we're back once again, afternoon with Tracy and friends, Jeff in the air chair here live on WSOM 600 AM. Sticks right beside me, helping me run things and keep this thing running smoothly. And we are talking about stand your ground and other types of self-defense with firearms and things in America and in different states. It's slightly different to all states, but some things have a basic thought and view. And we're going to explore those things. Not so blind, Mike, I'm going to let you finish what you were saying just before we went to break and try to get it brief because I have about five other callers to come in as
sure.
well.
Sure.
407, you're going to be coming in, but I have an unlisted caller just before you, and 330-482 as well. And I want you guys just to hold on. I promise you I'll get to you. And I'm bringing up my room, and we're talking to Masad Ayoub, who is a law enforcement for 39 years, he's told me, and has specializing in self-defense and
use of force.
And so, not so blind, Mike. Go ahead and finish your statement and question to Mr. Ayoub.
Sure. I think, in fairness, we did get a chance to talk offline when you were on the commercial.
I'm sure, but we need to do it for the show now.
Okay, I'm going to do it for the show. My two questions were, I was curious to, we had had a discussion about how if anybody's following you, I don't care what color you are, if you consider yourself one of the vulnerable people in society and you're not packing and very confident, you're going to be creeped out by anybody slowly following you at a car, looking at you, and following
mm-hmm.
you across the ground through your neighborhood when you're zigging and zagging through buildings, you know? And then from there we moved on real quick to I was curious as to why Zimmerman would give up the advantage of distance, why anybody armed would give up the advantage of distance, and Mr. Masad explained to me that it was because he was surprised because I guess Trayvon had doubled back and surprised them basically, and that's why they were within arm's length of each other and could start the physical confrontation. At least that's according to Zimmerman's testimony. And then then the other thing is that he did what I asked, was gracious enough to do what I needed. He gave me his website address so that I could contact him to see what strategies he had for disabled people to protect themselves because he is a self-defense expert. And I'm going to turn back to Mr. Masad Ayoub, and if I pronounce that right, and let him give his email address, his website address.
Oh,
thank you.
Yeah, we're going to do all of that because I want to talk to him about his books and things like that, and
sure.
give him a chance to put that out as well.
Well, thank you, and that was pretty much it. We covered all the ground I needed to, and great show and great guests. And Mr. Do you mind if I just call you Mr. Masad?
Sure. Oh, thank you, Mike. Just Mass.
Hey, Mass. Thank you very much, and. send Mass. Thank you very much for the information. I'm looking forward to communicating with you.
Well, thank you, Mike.
So go ahead, Mass, before we go forward, because I'm bringing up my unidentified caller. Your number comes up unlisted, so you're going to come up right as soon as Mr. Ayoub gives us his information, how we can contact him and see the things
sure.
that he's done, and et cetera, et cetera.
Sure. For the training classes, it would be the website is massadayoubgroup.com. For the books at Barnes & Noble, you can pick up Masad Ayoub on Combat Shooting, a complete book of combat hand gunnery, and Gun Digest book of concealed carry. I have some other books out also from Police Bookshelf at ayoub.com.
Very well, very well. And so we invite you to please go check out his sites and purchase the books and things like that. The more we expand ourselves, the more we understand, the better we all are and better off we all are, because then we don't name things that may not be what we perceive them to be at that instant. And anyway, unlisted caller, you are in the air.
Yeah, I just wanted to say it just sounds like the same thing to me. As long as you shoot them and kill them and you come up with a story, then it'll be accepted. Because all the stuff that was going on getting followed, I mean, like your guest, I'm sure if his wife or daughter or someone was getting followed, and
What happened? You feel
well,
completely
I'll say at first, my wife or daughter, if they were being followed, would hopefully be alert to it. And one thing we haven't touched on here yet, if they had a cell phone, and we know Trayvon was literally talking on a cell phone at the time, they would have called 911.
No, sir.
Let's look at that. Let's take a second and look at that alternate reality. If he had called in, dispatch would have realized, okay, we've just got a call of a man being followed. From the same place, we just got a call where the guy from Neighborhood Watch is following a suspicious person. You already had the responding officer about 1 minute away at the time of the shooting. He probably would have gotten there. They probably would have called Zimmerman back because they would have had his number and said, hey, we've got a call here from what appears to be the gentleman you're surveilling, and he thinks you are a suspect following him. Stay where you are. And probably a minute later, the Sanford officer would have arrived, and by the time it was over, everybody would have laughed about it and had the, you know, the equivalent of President Obama having a beer in the White House Rose Garden with the Cambridge College professor and the police officer who had had the mistaken identity situation with him a couple of years before.
You talk
why
about
Trayvon
Harvey.
Did not do that, I do not know. Why Trayvon did not simply call 911, I do not know.
Because he was a young man.
Hold on, hold on, 407. You're going to be next. Yeah, go ahead, 407.
Right. Hey, Jeff, thanks for tuning me in to this topic. You know, I hear the different opinions, and just the opinion about Trayvon possibly calling a dispatcher. I think in that case, he doesn't realize the statistics as far as pedophiles in the state of Florida.
Well,
and
I'm sure he does because, you know, that's what the young lady was saying, that there are homosexual rapists that are there. And then, you know, you got this vehicle riding slow. And you don't know who it is, and then you're upset that somebody's going to choose you. And understand something, and this is only something that we as African-American people can get to. Now, I will call the police, okay, because I'm not afraid of the police. Okay, but when I was young, I would not have called you. And the reason why is because I receive worse treatment from police than I do from anybody else. So,
so you're right about that.
That's what's not understood. In, the dynamic is understood in this whole case. Black inner city people don't call the police, and I'm a black inner city person. Okay, I had to learn differently to get to the point where I would consider that the police were my friend, because the police had me after I got chased by two German shepherds coming out of an all-white neighborhood. They had me putting me in a paddy wagon because some other blacks were riding six blocks away. So you have to understand, I don't consider that safety. Okay,
no,
Trayvon Martin is not thinking that's safe.
Right. But okay. Pertaining to the Stand Your Ground law, I feel as though in this case, when they talked about him taking the classes that he did and the intense discussions pertaining to the self-defense, I mean, how can you get an A in the class and all you talked about in the studies that you would even attempt, knowing that you had a firearm on you, which you failed to disclose to the dispatcher, then who's at fault then? Because, I mean, that should have been made plain when you've taken these classes to let the dispatcher know, okay, I'm neighborhood watch, but I am armed. And just that instance then, even with them still telling him not to follow him and to remain in the vehicle, if it's pitch black and you can't see any trained officer that doesn't have a partner is not going to go walking off into darkness, complete darkness, if you can't see the name of the street sign or whatever. So, I was really disturbed about the investigation. I feel as though the crime scene was contaminated because they didn't do a thorough investigation. Because, you know, when they were saying that the life-threatening injuries to him, come on now, if you bang somebody's head on concrete that many times, I think the residue of skin would be still there. And I don't even remember in the case even hearing or seeing them saying that they even scraped the ground for it. I mean, the technology was there, but I think they failed to do that.
It wouldn't have mattered. That would have worked on Zimmerman's behalf anyway, because that would have justified him doing what he did. You have to understand that that's, you know, he went on self-defense, and self-defense is what he was saying, and if they had found his skin, scraped on that sidewalk, that would have been something. But there were so many things here. Like I said, I'm saying Zimmerman was not a racist. I say Zimmerman was stupid, in my estimation. I think he was just stupid, because just what you just said, following him, right. So under defense, the defense law, and the evidence that was able to be collected, there was none, you know, there was no question about the situation to, you know, in to that law. And that's what you had to go by, the law. We can't imply, because we want to, that Zimmerman's guilty. We can't just assume that he's guilty. Yeah, we can't just assume he's guilty. However, the fact that, in my set, that he was the initiator is not considered in the law. That an unlisted caller, I want you to be able to finish your what you were saying, because your phone broke up in the middle of what you were saying. You never did get a chance to finish, but not yet. But hold on 1 second. That's all I'm saying to the whole thing. No identification,
right.
No identification that I'm block watch or anything. And then you sitting, you know, you're sitting back and you shoot the man after he's defending himself, and there's nobody considering that chasing a white man chasing a black man, and whether he's white by heritage, I'm not saying his skin is white, That's what's being considered the problem. And you have to understand,
yeah.
We die too much like that, and history is on our side with that.
Right,
you know,
right.
Okay.
But we're going
over this. We're really wasting our guest here, because our guest can speak to the law a lot better than you know what our opinion is because of what we feel or what we see. We're going to see it one way, and the other side's going to see it a different way. There's no doubt. And
okay,
somewhere
I got
in between is the truth.
I got one more question, Jeff, and he can speak on it afterwards. Okay, we got this other case coming up where this young man was shot because he was playing loud music. And the person that shot him was elder. He said the same thing, too. He was standing his ground. So with that being said, I'm going to let him answer that question and see what his take is on that, this case coming up.
Sure, that would be the Dunn case. Yeah, he's talking
yeah.
about the Dunn case, the death of Jordan Davis. Yeah, basically,
yeah.
again, I don't see that one being stand your ground either. The reason being that the shooter fled the scene. Second, the shooter.
Oh, he just dropped.
Oh, man, he dropped again?
Yep, he sure did.
Oh, my goodness.
We spoke to this earlier in the program. And Mossad at that time had said that in that particular case, that gentleman is still in jail. There has been no bond issued. It's not going to be a stand your ground case because there is no evidence to support a claim of stand your ground.
So in other words, the guy has not gotten away with this
right
now.
That's right. He's not going to get away with this.
Unlisted caller, you may speak now. You had a lot of noise going on in the back there. I couldn't do anything with you.
Yeah, you pretty much answered it because I was going to say the same thing when he said call the police. I mean, we're not doing that. And a 17-year-old young boy ain't thinking about calling the police either. He's just thinking about trying to get away from them. And, I mean, he believes everything Zimmerman says. I mean, but the other person's not here to tell his side of the story. But he'll believe everything he says, no matter if you catch him in one lie or not. You know what
well,
I mean? Back. Sorry, the ball dropped the
back.
Call.
Yeah, you're back, Doc.
Go ahead.
Yeah, where I came in at the end, it's not a question of believing what one guy says and not the other. It's basically analyzing the evidence and seeing which theory of the case is compatible with that evidence.
Yeah, but if you're coming from one side, yeah, you believe that. But why come so many other people who watch the same thing, and they don't see that they don't see the evidence where he should have got away for free? Not, I mean, I'm with Jeff. I don't believe it was a racial thing either. I believe it was stupidity, and I believe it was somebody who had a gun. I believe he had a gun out the whole time, and I believe that's why he was running from me, because he seen he had a gun. And then if I see somebody who got a gun on me, I'm gonna try to do something. You can't outrun a bullet, so I'm gonna try to beat them up, do whatever I can so I can live. As simple as that.
Go ahead, man.
I've been in this situation where there was no evidence of that. Four different times for nothing.
Go ahead, Mark.
Well, one thing we all have to ask ourselves is, if Zimmerman had the gun out to begin with, why did he let a guy punch him in the face? Why did he let a guy bang
exactly.
his head on the sidewalk? Why didn't he shoot him 40 seconds sooner?
I agree. I agree with you there. That is true. I have another unlisted caller. Go ahead. You're in there.
Yeah. It's Michigan. Yeah, I don't know who that.
Wait a minute. Go ahead. Michigan?
Hello?
Wait a minute. Unlisted caller, go ahead. What's going on with my phones here?
I don't know.
Michigan, you should be up and running.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, the you know, it it, it all
almost starts to anger you, man, when you hear a particularly white folk try to rationalize Zimmerman's actions. You know,
wait a minute. First of all, wait. Hold on, Michigan. Do you know who we're talking to here?
No, I just I just last couple comments.
Okay, well, listen, we have
right.
Wait a minute. I'm just saying, this is our guest today. His name is Mr. Masab Ayoub, who is a law enforcement for 39 years. He's one of the foremost authorities on
use of force
in the country. He's very familiar with these things, and he's been explaining some things very well. And he's not trying to justify Zimmerman so much as saying that the evidence that was happening, the evidence that was there, did not support anything but what
right.
Zimmerman said. And that may or may not be, you know, in my opinion, I should say, what actually happened. But the evidence, I understand when you only have so much to go on, you can't assume other things happened. But go ahead now, Michigan.
Well, and the thing about it is, the authorities to me, even with the stand your ground issue, here's the critical piece I think that nobody knows that we're on Zimmerman's side. There's no question that Zimmerman got out of his car. There's no question that Zimmerman followed him. These are all not questionable. What we don't is Zimmerman is saying at some point Trayvon rushed him and started beating him up. Now, this is what he's saying. Now, what we don't know is why he did that. Now, if he's following him and he feels threatened, isn't that part of standing your ground? Hey, he going after him. So, but we don't know that part, right? All we know is that Zimmerman said, hey, he started kicking my butt. Then I had to kick him. Well, he should have started kicking his butt. So for that alone, that's Trayvon Martin standing his ground. That's the one thing. Why is that not Trayvon Martin standing his ground? That's the only piece we don't know. We know that Zimmerman followed him. We know that Zimmerman came up to him. Trayvon didn't go to him. So why is that not Trayvon standing his ground? And because of that, he should be convicted of murder. He was standing.
Yeah, so
he's still in the wrong.
Go ahead, Matt.
Speaking to it just from the legal side, I know this caller came in late. We discussed it before, but it bears discussion again. Someone following us is not reason for us to physically assault them, to start punching them in the face or banging their head against a sidewalk or anything else. Essentially, the law would have seen that as an overreaction. And if Zimmerman had not had a gun, Trayvon would have very likely been convicted of felony aggravated assault, be looking at, let's say 7 years. Or if Zimmerman had died from it, Trayvon, even though he might have legitimately perceived himself to be in danger and having been followed, if Zimmerman had died from that assault, would probably have been convicted at the very least of manslaughter, and been looking at the same 30 years that Zimmerman was looking at that he'd been convicted. I think one of the takeaways from all of us is if you're being followed, call the police. I do not care if you like the police or not, if you've had bad relationships with police or not. What's happening, dispatch will record, as it recorded Zimmerman's call, your perceptions. Now, we've had callers here who believe that Trayvon thought he was being stalked by a pedophile. I'm not sure why a pedophile would be stalking somebody who stands 5 feet 11 to 6 feet 3 inches tall, depending on the testimony. But if somewhere there had been a recording of Trayvon Martin's voice a minute before he was killed that said, this man is stalking me, a moment ago one of the callers thought that Zimmerman had his gun out the whole time. If that 911 dispatch call had recorded Trayvon Martin's voice saying, there's a man in an SUV, he's following me, he has a small black pistol in his hand, oh my God, right now we would not be having this discussion and George Zimmerman would be sitting in the Florida State Penitentiary.
No, he wouldn't. This is a game. You see, let me say something, man. this is why this is a game. If this is
tell us why you think it's a game, sir.
This is a fact. Zimmerman's conversation with the dispatch is a fact. Zimmerman said they get away with this. These are all facts. So this is evidence that adds up to Trayvon Martin standing his ground. Trayvon Martin didn't say any of that. There's no evidence that he said Zimmerman always gets away with. None of this exists, but this conversation does exist. So to say, hey, if Zimmerman was just following him, we're not talking about somebody walking behind somebody in the mall. Of course you wouldn't turn around and bust somebody in the face that's walking behind you in the mall. Well, that's what I was. So that's a game to say, hey, you just can't turn around and bust somebody in the face and your head against the concrete. Ooh, everybody knows that.
Well, let me ask a question. Oh, go ahead.
Hey, Moss, we have a lot of callers that believe the system doesn't work for them. Can you quickly paraphrase? I saw a YouTube video of you doing a speech, and you spoke about a man from Iowa City.
Do
a real quick paraphrase of that for our callers that believe the system doesn't work for them.
Sure. The system certainly did not work for Jay Lewis. Jay was an African-American. He gets into a road rage situation precipitated by two white guys in a vehicle. And as the vehicles come to a stop, those guys get out, approach him assaultively. Jay Lewis is licensed to carry a gun. He draws his .380 pistol, he tells them to stay back, and they lunge at him. He shoots and wounds one of them, and they decide, ow, this attack, beating up on a black guy for whatever motivation we have, seems to hurt. Wow, there's this hot thing going through my body. I think I'm leaving now. Jay Lewis wound up being arrested for aggravated assault. Wound up spending God knows how many days in jail because they put a six-figure bond on him that he could not afford. Now, he's a decent working man. He had a government job in an office. Well, the apartment he lives in, when you're in jail, they don't let you bring your checkbook, they don't let you get your mail, and they don't let you pay your bills. So he goes behind in the rent. The Tenants Association of the Landlord or whatever it was reads about this in the paper and said, oh, my goodness, we can't have someone among us who shoots people. And they decide they're going to evict him. They send the eviction notice to his apartment where they know or should have known he could not get it because it's public information that he's in jail. And when the thing times out, they dump all his property out on the lawn. Everything is stolen, his computers, his furniture, everything, including a book he was writing that was on one of those computers. And when the guy finally goes to trial, he's acquitted on self-defense. Iowa at that time, the gun owners there had been pushing for a stand-your-ground law similar to Florida that would have essentially put him in the position that Zimmerman was, that, look, you can't arrest this guy until you've got probable cause that he was committing a crime, until you can show that it was not self-defense. Instead, here's a man who ends up basically penniless and homeless and totally messed over, is the best euphemism I can give for it, by the system. That man, I think, would have fared much better under the Stand Your Ground law in the state of Florida.
And after all of that, he was acquitted, correct?
Oh, yes, he was acquitted.
Yeah, and after all of that loss, I don't know whether he could ever sue anybody else. Did he lose his job, too, did you say?
I do not know if he lost the job or not. I know, he was out of work for, 115 days or whatever it was that he was incarcerated prior to trial. Lost basically his home and everything he had in his home.
Wow. 330705.
Well, we've got to look at here when everybody says, well, if you killed somebody, you must answer for it, you must go to jail, and you must have a trial. People don't realize these trials cost a huge amount of money that most of us do not have. The Zimmerman defense is estimated to go about $1 million in legal fees. And instead of being the person who's outraged that someone's dead, when we look at the Stand Your Ground laws, our original topic for today, we have to ask ourselves, okay, what if we are the one who had to fire in self-defense? Do we want to be treated like a murderer until 17 months later when we're finally exonerated?
Well, we understand, but the thing is under those laws, historical account and historical treatment is not considered, and that's why we have a double standard in society, because you have a set of people that have been more or less pulled out of the herd, per se, and treated differently. Yeah, I know you do, and I understand where you're saying, you know, under the law. I don't have a problem. I've learned a lot today, even though, you know, we've just been going on about this. But those things are important. I want to get one more caller in before you give your information about your site again. 330-705, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. I guess I would like to address something that's not been in the news. And that was the shooting of Antonio West, the baby, and the assault of the Georgia pastor 2 weeks prior to that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that he would probably know about that.
Yeah, it was a tragic case. Two young teens shot and killed a baby approximately 13 months old.
Allegedly, because we have information that they didn't do it now.
Like all of this, we have to wait till the evidence shakes out in court.
The other part would be the Trayvon Martin. I don't believe that Sanford was his home turf. He was there 200 miles away from where he normally lived, and the reason why he was there, I think, would have... While you can't bring it to court, it is really a detriment to... What this guy was in his history. And I think history normally, I don't care what your nationality is or whatever, pretty much past history predicts today's and future behavior.
Well,
okay,
the reason that did not come in, I can understand why the judge ruled that out. It comes under Federal Rule of Evidence 404B, which says essentially prior bad acts by your opponent, if they were not known to you at the time you harmed him, cannot be introduced as evidence on your behalf to justify your having harmed him. The reason is you're being judged for the decision that you made, and therefore only what was known to you and went into that decision process goes in front of the jury. We discussed earlier that the standard is the reasonable man standard. And the question the judge tells the jury to ask themselves is a three-pronged test. It's what would a reasonable and prudent person have done in the exact same situation, knowing what you, the defendant, knew. And because none of that was known to Zimmerman, it could not be introduced in his defense.
Right, and the point I make is that the perception out there is that here's a local kid, you know, that's got in trouble, got accosted by a guy that was a watch fella. In his own neighborhood, and that was all, in fact, not the case. And nobody on, you know, any of the media, any place, tries to bring out that. I mean, they sort of sensationalize all this stuff and keep it on the hot burner to keep, you know, keep the pot boiling, so to speak.
Well, we're here at the end of the day, and Moss, if you'd give your information again, and also I was looking over your website. If an organization wants to have you come in and put on one of your training programs, what do they have to do?
That you'd want to contact me on the site, and I'd get you a prospective host information package. We're looking at a couple of possible sites in Ohio for next year. Those will probably be posted sometime around November. The website is MassadaYouthGroup.com. That's MassadaYouthGroup.com. AYOOBgroup.com.
And your books are available on Amazon?
Most of my books are available on Amazon. Some are from Police Bookshelf. Some are from the Gun Digest Corporation. Some of those will also be found in the sporting section, firearms section at Barnes & Noble.
Well, Mass, I've enjoyed you being our guest today. You've been an excellent guest, and I appreciate it. I hope you'll come back again. It did get bogged down in some side issues, but you handled them very well, and I appreciate you and appreciate what you do. Look forward to meeting you.
Well, thank you, my friend. It's been a spirited debate.
Absolutely. God bless, my friend. We'll be back the same time tomorrow. Sticks will give you a call.
Thanks.
Home for afternoons with Tracy and friends. News Talk 600 WSOM.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daniela Bellotta. The Fed's not finding much to applaud in the economy, so it's going to keep doing what it's been doing, as we hear from ABC's Vic Ratner.
A very cautious Federal Reserve Board downgrades its estimate of growth in the economy to modest and decides to continue its bond-buying policies to spur the economy. The statement from the Open Market Committee says purchases of bonds will continue until the outlook for the job market has improved